The greatest human temptation is to settle for too little.
I know for a fact we do not win those championships of Florida without that experience.
Yeah, I believe God wants more for us. We're made for more. God wants more for us, and God's always pushing us to step into that.
The strongest forms of motivation are love, fear, and hate. Only one's sustainable. But fear and hate are powerful motivators.
Powerful.
Have I used those? Oh, hell yeah.
Sure.
I'm going to pull your scholarship.
All right, welcome back to the podcast. Today's episode is phenomenal. It's powerful. It's with Urban Meyer, Coach Urban Meyer, my father-in-law. I get the privilege to sit down with him, talk about leadership, talk about the secret ingredients, the two ingredients to living elevated, living inspired, and just a bunch of wisdom that he drops. If you're a fan, if you have a family, if you have a company, if you're overall looking to grow and become and step into your potential, this episode will not disappoint. So with that being said, enjoy.
Tell Gian, tell Mermaid that Buddy did the cold plunge.
Yeah.
Your dad's fully bought in, and that's you're Geege, you're officially on the podcast.
I knew that was gonna happen. All right, I will.
Bye.
Love you. All right, well, that's a great way to start, though. We got Urban Meyer here, and yeah, he is my father-in-law. So my wife just called her dad, and she's an absolute savage. I mean, I'm not surprised every time she does stuff, whether it's wakeboarding or be a mom. You know, she's a rock star woman. I'm like, you must have had, oh, yeah, you're right. That's right. Your dad's Urban Meyer. So, yeah, what's that like having three grown children? I mean, You're a dad of three. I got a lot of questions for you on that, but yeah, what's exciting you about life with family these days?
I think that's really important. This is really good to talk about because you look at the women in our life. You have Gigi, you have Nikki, and you have Shelly, and they're three of the toughest human beings. And that, where does that come from? You can say me. No, it's Shelly. Shelly is a rugged, tough gal that, you know, is independent. You know, they don't play that game with a second-class citizen. You know, the whole, you know, some political stuff going on out there about men and women's sports and et cetera, et cetera. They don't play that game. You know, they're, and they can certainly, you know, when I read and see some stuff, I just visualize what that would be like for someone to tell my wife or my two daughters that this is the way it's going to be. That would be a fight that they couldn't win.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
So I think... You know, I'm so proud to see the girls growing up to be professionals, strong in faith, incredible moms, and incredible wives. And I think it's because of Shelly.
Yeah. And she grew up on a farm, so she had that, like, yeah, toughness, right? Tough, so that obviously – but she's a tough cookie. I remember when we first got together, Gigi and I, we met in college, and I came to understand, like, you as her dad. I'm like, okay, he's a big deal in the football world. Obviously, like, this, you have this presence and you're a man of few words, especially when I first met you. And so there's nerves on top of just being like a potential future father-in-law. But she goes, don't worry about that. Like, don't even stress. As long as mom, as long as Shells likes you, you're good.
Well, you figure we moved 9 times.
Yeah.
And I never looked at a house. I never bought a house. And I certainly never went to a closing. And so she bought and sold 9 homes. She moved children across the country. At one point, it was 4 states in 5 years.
Wow.
And the you know, the logistical piece of that was I would take the job and I'm gone. And she'd say, we're coming in this weekend, and this week, and we're going to move in April or whatever. And I'm recruiting. I said, okay. You know, I trusted her, and obviously look at her family. Look at our family. It's great.
So behind every championship coach, you know, in football, is an extraordinary woman to, like, hold them.
Yeah, it's not every. You know, you don't want to stereotype that because sometimes there's not the strength. You know, it's just like, you know, behind every great athlete, you know. And I never even included Shelly from behind because she was always very involved. So she was unique, you know, and you know, and I always tell the story when I would go to Florida and I leave Florida and go to Ohio State, you know, they were tired of me. They're just like, man, we don't want to lose Shelly. And, you know, to this day, same, you know, I retired at Ohio State and everybody's like, yeah, it was probably time.
Yeah.
Damn, we miss Shelly. So it's great.
Man. No, she's great. I mean, we talked about out there how important it is to surround yourself with people who like hold you accountable, make you better, who can support you and tell you like, hey, the harsh truth. And I think that's something she does super well. I remember you talking at the summit to the guys there in April. One of the topics was how love is tough love. So she's been that person for you to just keep you accountable and push you to greatness, I imagine.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's a very big misunderstanding. Love is not soft. Love is actually really hard. Deep love of your children, deep love of a player as a friend. You see them doing something they shouldn't do and you let it go. That's not love. That's failure. You just failed that person. When you confront it, when you have conversation about it, when you try to fix it and make things better and make that person better, that's love. And that's hard, man. I mean, that's, and I would share that with our players all the time that, you know, we're not letting things go.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. And sometimes I'd hear players go to other places and I'd actually, a lot of times I'd stay close with guys and they're like, I get it now. I'm seeing stuff at this place that would never happen because everybody just kind of lets it go.
Yeah. I love that. So like love, yeah, true. Like love is tough. It's not soft. It has boundaries. It calls you to greater. Like I love that idea of like love being, I see you for where you are and where you're at, but I want so much more for you. Therefore, I'm going to push you and try to call that out of you.
When you look at job, I would always do this too. Look at job descriptions. So when God, and I have a very clear understanding, you know, it's really not a one out there, but what a parent should be. And if you just visualize, if God put it in on paper and said, okay, here's, just like when you take a job, head coach at Ohio State, they hand you a contract, and on that contract is never lose the rivalry game, win every game you play, graduate your players, et cetera, you know, meet with the boost owners, whatever. Nowhere on that contract at Ohio State did it say, be friends with my players. I never, right. And I tell them that every year. It actually said, I don't have to be friends, you know, never said be friends with your staff. What did it say? Be excellent.
Yeah.
Be great at what you do. Same thing as a parent. I would, you know, if you, you know, there's going to be times where your parents, you don't like your parents. Matter of fact, probably a lot if you have really good parents. If, and they have to understand that, you know, why are there parameters? Why are there guardrails? Why are there rules? Why are there accountability if you don't live up to those standards? When you get older and sometimes it settles in, I get it now. Because they see greatness in you that maybe other people don't see.
Yeah. That's really powerful. What are your thoughts on like having that type of tough love for yourself? You know, because there's that element out there where it's like, have love for yourself, which I think is healthy. Obviously it can be unhealthy if you're not calling yourself to greater. So how does that work for you? Do you have that sense of like tough love for yourself?
Yeah. And I was an extremist, you know, there was potholes in my career and it wasn't really the outside pressure. It was the internal pressure that was overwhelming. And I look back now and why was that? And it was fear. It was of letting people down. When you're a head coach at a place, you got 50 to 100 people, families working for you.
Yeah.
You have 100 players counting on you. You have this giant alumni base. You have, you know, Gator Nation, Buckeye Nation, you know, University of Utah, whatever it is. And when you sit and take that deep breath, you're like, oh, man, this is overwhelming. And if something's not in place or if something's out of line, I really struggled with that.
Yeah.
And it became miserable because I just – and I would try to take the foot off the accelerator at times and I saw the product start to slip. And so I jump right back in as that maniac, you know, that every – I was in almost all meetings. I was, involved in everything to the point that, you know, it almost killed me.
Yeah. Okay. There's so much there. Like how to like be relentlessly excellent, but also like let go of the outcome. Like,
I'm not the person to talk about that. I actually studied it. I had some mentors, some friends, you know, Bob Stoops and Mac Brown are two guys.
Mentors.
Legendary coaches that when I went through my, you know, that time I stepped down in Florida, I was like, how do you do this? How do you shut her off and enjoy it? And it was hard, both of them said, but you know, they had that skill to do it. And the more research I did, not many had that skill. Most of them are, the ones of high performance.
Yeah.
The ones that, you know, are not doing well, they probably do too much of that.
Right.
But for the high performance ones,
yeah,
it's a, I don't want to say disease because that's strong. It's a addiction.
Mm. But that's what fuels the greatness. And I'm fortunate to be surrounded by you and just conversations like this and more relaxed ones when we're just hanging out at the pool. Like I get so much wisdom from you. So thank you for that. When we talked about the out in the workout, how important it was for you when you were coaching to stay, like master the basics and stay consistent with the training, you know, waking up, scripture, training, moving, fueling. Like talk to me about, for high achievers, how important that is to take care of the body, the mind, and the spirit. Because quite honestly, like we said, it's so easy to forget that and think, well, dude, I don't got time for that. I'm behind. We lost to so-and-so. I got to get to work. So talk to me about that.
Yeah, I learned that at an early age. I didn't always live it. I knew that, you know, I had a very good routine. I was in bed always by 10:15. Hmm. And then I was up at 5:30. I was in that office by 6 a.m. and I had my devotional. Tim Kite would write a devotional. I had my Bible. It was right by my family pictures. And I would always come in and I couldn't wait to get there. Mm. And I'd put my stuff down and I'd read it. And I'd try to get myself in a good place. At noon, the window shut. And my assistant would always make sure my calendar was clear at noon. Mm. I'd walk up to the treadmill. I'd go on a walk outside. I'd lift weights. I'd do whatever. And then I'd eat that healthy lunch. And then I'd go to practice and attack the day.
Yeah.
And it became just a flywheel. That was your daily routine. Then all of a sudden, boom, you hit that speed bump. You lose a game. Your best player gets hurt. Some player gets in trouble. Some negative whatever. And all of a sudden, you don't eat. Mm-hmm. You quit working out. That impacts your sleep. And then your performance starts to spin. Mm-hmm. What I just mentioned, I was part of an article, Not the Lone Wolf. It was written years ago. And I had easily 1,000 either letters, emails, phone calls of high-end executives, coaches, people that said, thanks for writing this article.
Oh, wow.
That's me. And it helped them.
Yeah. And what was the summary, if you can condense that article into a couple of thoughts?
That mental health is real. That you know, the three mechanisms we just talked about, your faith, your nutrition,
yeah,
your sleep, and then your family. You know, it's if you're not watching those things, that car is going to break down.
Yes.
And it's science. That's not a maybe. That's, you know, very, very rare. Are you say those are absolutes? That's an absolute.
Mm-hmm.
That's science.
Yeah.
That will happen.
Yeah.
And it's happened to many. And I think it's probably at different levels. I'm going to say it's happened the most. You reach that point sometime, you're like, what do I do?
Yeah.
And I'd say most people, it's hit them. I'd probably say everyone. Mm. Everyone in that high-stressed, high-performance position,
yeah,
it's hit them. I remember, I don't want to start saying names, I've had phone calls from people that you're like, wow, really? Really?
You're surprised that they hit it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, Hall of Fame this, Hall of Fame that. Mm. And they're like, yeah, you know, I mean, I went through this, I went through that. And I'm going, yeah, really? And
yeah.
They hit it well, but it happened.
Interesting. Well, that's good to know. So when you're talking about this, you know, these days with college football, when you're looking back on your career, like let's say you're 30 years old and you could do one thing differently. You could like change your approach or change your mentality. Would you go back and change anything?
Oh, sure. The one thing that I grew up in the Woody Hayes, Earl Bruce, Bo Schembechler era, where education was as important as athletics, mm-hmm. Where toughness was a premium, put it a premium. And so people look back and they say, man, we ran it like Navy SEAL special ops, you know. It was hard.
Yeah.
And I just believed in the hard. You don't train easy.
Mm.
You know, and it was a little bit like when I challenge our coaches, why are you doing that drill? That's an easy drill. let them do that on their own. Do the hard stuff. And so my father would always say, you develop scars or calluses. How do you do that? Not on the easy.
Doing tough stuff.
Tough stuff.
Yeah.
And when you're facing your rival in November in, 12 degree weather, you're down by 7 and one of your best players goes down with an injury, how do you train for that moment? I think you scar them. You callus them, everybody, yourself. How do you do that? Tough workouts in the off season. Accountability in the off season. Really hard midnight workout lifts. Hard practices. Because what does hard do? It scars you. It calluses you. It gets you ready for those moments that are hard. And so that was our philosophy. Do I look back and say, was it at times too much? Would I change it? Probably not. You know, it's a much different era. Was it 2025? You can't do that now.
Yeah.
You know, everybody quit. But back then it was just a different era.
Yeah.
Which is era's better? I don't know.
Just different. Yeah. No, it's did you see your own documentary, that Swamp, whatever? What were your thoughts on that?
Swamp Kings.
Swamp Kings.
Oh, that was well done. I thought it was, I never knew they had all the back, the video of the off season workouts, the wrestling.
Yeah.
The mat drills, we called them, the midnight lifts, the locker room scenes after big wins or a tough loss. I never really saw a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
But my the thing I'm really happy about is our players. You know, you saw Brandon Siler, Spikes, Tebow, all these great players get interviewed. And, the media at times would beat some of those guys up. And to see them be grown men now and talk about it, I love it.
Yeah, it's so good. The brotherhood there, camaraderie. I mean, it's obviously an honor to have you on the podcast. I think one day we'll have Tebow on the podcast as well, and that'd be incredible to pick his brain. He's a guy I looked up to.
He just had a baby girl.
For years. Brand new dad, right?
Yeah, crazy. Yesterday.
Crazy. Beautiful, beautiful girl. And I always say, too, like, and he's such a man of faith, but having a kid, like, if I wasn't a believer in a higher power, I don't know how I'd look at a baby who I created with my wife and say, nah, this is just an accident. You know, it's like, how silly. It just doesn't make sense. It's not silly. It's just, I can't fathom how that's the case. But okay, let's move into fatherhood. That's a great kind of segue in my brain when it comes to being a dad. You got three grown kids, six grandkids, beautiful family. You've been blessed and highly favored. God's been great to you and your life. But you had two girls initially before Nate. And so as a dad, as a new dad for me, what advice, I'd love to hear advice that you have to give me in this season of life.
Well, I grew up in a family that it was tough. My father was a tough guy. It was a chemical engineer, brilliant. My mom was an immigrant from Germany. I called her the saint. I never heard her say a negative word about a human being. She was that good of a person. And my dad was tough as nails, man. He would always ask me the question. He'd say, simple question, complicated answer. I knew it was coming. And he goes, I don't care how smart you are, how fast you are, how tall you are, how strong you are. I got a simple question. And don't lie to me. Are you the hardest working guy on your team? And I'd say, yes, sir. Inside, I'm going, no, I'm not. I'm not.
You would say that?
No. I'd say, yes, I am.
Yeah.
But I lied. And one of the most fulfilling moments of my life when in high school I became that. And I remember he asked me, I couldn't wait for, it was a while. He used to ask me like once a month or once. And I kept waiting, almost like stirring him on. And he said, hey, are you the hardest worker? I said, yes, sir, and I am. And I was like,
declarative.
I am. And then the same thing when I got into the coaching profession, are you the hardest working coach in the country? And I'd look at him and, yeah. And then I start thinking, I'm not. And you can lie to other people, but then you start lying to yourself and like, wait a minute. And then when I became that, and once again, it's all relative, who knows, but I kind of had that reputation and I would like to meet someone who worked harder. I told him, I'll never forget, I couldn't wait for him to ask that question. And he said, are you the hardest worker? I said, Dad, I am. And all these years, I maybe haven't been honest with you. Here I am. I am.
Telling the truth.
And just that feeling was like a cathartic moment.
Yeah.
That absolutely. So we raised our children the same way that, that performance is expected and we want it, but everyone's got different talents. Nate's a perfect example. Nate didn't really was engaged in sports at all. Where my two daughters were animals. You know, Gigi's, I never seen anything like it. She played boy sports until she was like fifth grade.
She was playing football.
Monster.
With pads.
Monster. And then Nikki was the best athlete of all of them.
Yeah.
And then Nate just, you know, I called him the intellect. He just wasn't interested. He was very smart, studious, real disciplined. And then we moved to Columbus and he became, just obsessed with it and became a captain of football and basketball or football and baseball. So we're very fortunate. The one thing that every guy that ever walked and dated my daughter, the first thing they did when they walk in our house, they had to pray. And if it was uncomfortable for them, I would try to challenge, say, why is that so uncomfortable for you? You guys don't pray in your family? And you did that.
Yeah.
And I kind of, a lot of times I would scare them away or be like, man, this guy in this family is too weird for us, which we saved a problem.
Yeah.
True. I don't think you can, I don't want my family involved in that. If you're a person without any faith or moral compass, that's not going to work out. And the good thing is we have three, spouses to go along with our three children. I told people recently, I've been saying, one of the coolest things in our family, we're three for three. Mm-hmm. Every three of the spouses I take as children, we love them. The way they're raising their families, I'm watching it, and we couldn't be happier.
Yeah, it's so good. That's amazing to hear. Like I see that in Gigi. She's inspired me to become more the man that I was created to be. And that's such a blessing from God to have that as a woman in my life. How do you balance like that performance with, I guess, like, because I'm looking at my girls, and I'm thinking like, I want them to become everything they're capable of becoming, achieve and experience and all that, but also know their inherent worth as, human beings creating God's image. Like, how do you balance that?
That's a fine line. And I think it's biblical that, there's stories throughout the Bible of, God challenges people. You can do more. You can, the prodigal son, the different stories within the Bible. And I just don't believe he makes mistakes. He wants you to, whatever talents you have, use them.
Yeah.
And it's up to you as a parent to lead, to push, to grind, to, and I think in this, I do believe we were good at this, is that you're better than that is the greatest phrase I've ever heard. You're better than that, as opposed to, something, off base.
You're a
failure. Yeah. That's awful. You're terrible.
Yeah.
You're so much better than that. I've seen you do better things than that.
Yeah.
And the good thing with our three, I can count on my hand if I've ever, Gigi maybe once or twice, she went through the transition when she was done playing. She tells that story all the time where I said, what are you doing?
That was burned into her memory bank.
And then my son, never really had to, and Nikki kind of had a little spell where she just went off the rails a little bit, but came right back. And so we've been lucky with players. That's a daily routine. You're better than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a failure. And the hardest ones to coach were the ones that were babied.
Yeah.
You're the greatest. You're not the greatest.
Mm.
Man, your coach is the one screwed up. You should be playing more. Imagine some parent saying that. Think about that for a second.
Yeah, you're kind of handicapping the...
You're better than... Or no, your coach is wrong.
Yeah.
You should be starting.
Yeah.
Imagine saying that. That parent, I would like to meet that parent. I've met a few of them. I said, now, do you realize how damaging that is to that young person? As opposed to saying, shut your face, work really hard, be respectful to all leadership, and you be the hardest working person on that team, and you watch what happens. As opposed to, your coaches are wrong. I'm going to get them fired. What is that?
Yeah, that's so good. When you're saying that you're better than that, it reminds me of like a phrase I always say, you're made for more. We're made for more. And one of my favorite quotes goes like this: the greatest human temptation is to settle for too little. Meaning, as human beings, we're made for more, and we're made for so much greatness and so much life and growth, but we settle for so little. And so that's the number one temptation, which is odd, because like you would think it's so, something else.
So hold that thought.
Yeah.
If you never taste greatness, how do you know what it tastes like?
Mm.
So in 2006, March, I get invited by Billy Donovan to the national championship game, Florida basketball. It's in Indianapolis. They send a private plane. I fly up to Indianapolis. I go to the game with Shelley. I'm watching UCLA against Florida. My buddy, my neighbor.
Yeah.
They're winning. They're up by 10. Minute left. They're going to win. The guy texts me. His operations guy, Billy Donovan, must have said something to him and said, hey, invite Coach down here in the locker room. I get a text, hey, Coach Donovan wants you in the locker room. I'm like, I physically start shaking. I've never done this in my life. I walk down and, you know, Gator fans everywhere, and I walk down around from behind, and I go in the locker room. And I'm peeking out the locker room watching 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, boom, and the confetti goes up, and they're cutting down the nets, and I'm crying, I'm teared up. And I'm watching these players that I know, because I was friends with Al Horford and Brewer and all those guys. And here they come walking in the locker room. And that changed my life forever. Because how do you know what a championship tastes like if you've never tried it?
Mm.
I'm watching these players. And all I'm thinking of the whole time is, how do I get my team in this locker room to feel and taste this? Because once you taste it once, you're going to want to do it again.
Mm.
It becomes an addiction.
Yeah.
It changes your behavior. And so that was my operation. You know, that's what I wanted to get done, is have our players somehow taste that. I had Billy Donovan come speak to our team. I took videotapes of locker rooms, championship locker rooms, and that was our whole message. And ironically, we won the national championship the next year.
Yeah, that's right. That's crazy. Year. And was that back-to-back?
Yep.
Casual. Yeah, so that's really powerful. Once you taste that greatness.
But how do you know if you never taste it?
Yeah.
How do you, and it's not, I don't think it's the individual's responsibility to taste it. It's the leader.
Mm.
It's the parent. You know, how does a kid get to taste greatness in corporate America?
Mm.
He or she doesn't.
Mm.
It's up to the mentor, the parent, the teacher. Sometimes there's great teachers, great coaches. Hey, come with me. Let me show you this. And all of a sudden it's whoa.
Yeah.
You know, and once I think that's the obligation of that parent, teacher, coach.
Yeah.
To let that person taste. It was my job at Florida to expose my players to that greatness.
Mm.
How'd I do it? I got lucky. Billy Donovan said, hey, come here and watch this. I know for a fact we do not win those championships at Florida without that experience.
Yeah. So that was a catalytic moment, kind of fueled.
Let me taste it.
Yeah. And fired you up.
Oh.
Which created the vision and the atmosphere and the leadership to inspire greatness. Yeah, that's so good. It's almost like, too, once you taste it, you have less of a desire for those lesser, you know, your appetite gets raised, your standards get raised for yourself.
I think it also, we're human beings, we make mistakes, and the tendency to make those mistakes starts to go way down if you know that's going to get in the way of that.
Yeah.
But the way the mind works, it's all risk reward. If I never experienced this,
mm-hmm.
how do I know these behaviors along the way are going to be roadblocks? You know, marijuana, the drugs, the alcohol, the behavior, the laziness, the selfishness, all the human elements that are real. We're fallen people. If you've never tasted that greatness, they become major roadblocks.
Mm-hmm.
If you know in your mind and your heart and you've been taught, those will actually get in the way of your greatness.
Yeah.
The chances are you will not do them or not do them as often.
It's good. Yeah, it's powerful, man. I think there's so much there. When you're talking about you mentioned corporate America, I'm just like so grateful that I walked away from corporate America. And we've had that conversation too, and I think that's part of my journey that I've told people. You're someone I admire and respect so much. And on paper, it was such a no-brainer to stay with Pfizer. But you remember that story? You remember that time in the car we had when we were just kind of hanging out, and you were saying, like, you asked me, hey, you know, how's work going? How's Pfizer going? I'm like, it's good, but I just, you know, I want to do something more. And you were like, you know, what's the something more? The side hustle? Like, just do what you got to do and put food on the table. And I totally, you know, heard that and respected that. And on paper, it logistically made sense to stay. But there was something like intuitively, like something deeper that was calling me to take a risk. And I'm just thanking God every single day, because now we're doing this. Now we're at the studio. Now we have all these non-traditional things. And so it was great. You gave me the opportunity to make a decision. And that resistance, you were like, hey, if you're going to do it, you better go all the way in and you better make it happen. There's no halfway doing this. And so I commend you for pushing me to do that, because you were a very large part of that conversation. But I bet you thought I was a total slap when I was making that decision.
Well, I didn't understand it, you know, and yeah. To see, I still completely understand it. I know that you're taking care of your family, and that's all I care about. But you made a comment to me, which I remember I pushed back on too. When you decide to get married, you now become number two. When you have one child, you now become number three. When you have two children, number four, and et cetera. You are not the most important person in your world. When you're single and all, it's your, live your passion. No, when you get married, it's not your passion anymore. It's yours together. And when you have a child, it's not your passion anymore. It's that God just gave you a child. Sure. Take care of that child. Mm-hmm. So, and I've had this conversation with many people, that not many people should ask you how you're doing when you have children and a wife. It's, no one really cares. How's you are the breadwinner. You're the provider. You're the mentor. You're the teacher. You're the educator. You're the spiritual leader. They can ask you that. And I've never really asked you how you feel, because I really don't care. But I do care how you're providing. I watch that closely. I mean, and I see it. And it warms my heart when I walk in the Pruitt house. It warms my heart when I see you with Gianna and Peyton and Gigi, and that's all I care about. You know, that's, I think those, some people maybe look at that the wrong way. I'm very firm with that. And I believe that's a God gift, that when you make that decision to get married, it is biblical.
Yeah.
That you are now one. It's not you anymore. Yeah. You lose that word. You. When you have children, you are now. And that's one of the problems I have with society right now, is that, you know, how about this stat? When I recruit a player that had a mother and a father, they didn't have to be married. They didn't, you know, some were separated, divorced. But as long as the mother and the father were involved, and that player had some kind of moral compass or faith, the hit ratio on that player was over 90%.
The what ratio?
The success rate. That the player would have a good career academically, a good career athletically. Maybe not great, but good.
Yeah.
The hit ratio, that's what's used in recruiting. When I recruit this 10 people, how many of the 10 are going to be good?
Right.
If it's two-parent household, and once again, they don't have to be married. They don't have to live together.
Yeah.
But they're both involved. And they're both interested in the success of that person. That's strong.
Yeah.
Here's the shameful, or this is the sad part. If the player comes from a single family home where there's no relationship with one of them and there's no faith, it's 5%, 6%.
That low?
Yeah, they're not going to make it.
Whoa.
And when I say not going to make it, they're not going to have a full academic experience or athletic experience. And that's not theory. That's a laboratory of 38 years of my life watching that. And so did that impact my recruiting later in my career? Absolutely.
Yeah,
I would really be very cautious about bringing someone in, because you just only have that much time. And I felt bad about it.
Yeah,
because I knew our program could probably help that person, but you can't do it. You got to win games. So the mother and the father and a moral compass, pretty strong indication that it's going to be good shape.
Yeah, family unit and faith. You mentioned something, and I just got my gears turning, because when you talk about the family unit being so strong, and that's, you know, that's your job to kind of lead from there, and me as a husband, as a father, to create a healthy family unit. Like, what do you think are the keys to building that? Like, because one of the things I actually want to tell you, which I love this about you and how you've led as a man and a father. I was at date night, dinner with Gigi, and we're finally getting back to those days, which Peyton for 4 months did not allow us to do. But we're sitting over dinner, and I'm asking her, I'm trying to learn, ask better questions. And I said, you know, you grew up with one of the most successful football coaches ever. What, like, looking back on your childhood, like, what do you wish, is there something that you wish he did differently or better? You know, I'm just trying to learn as a dad. And I'm like, how is he this successful? There's got to be something that maybe she wishes, right? She thought for like 2 minutes, and I'm just sitting there in silence eating my, you know, dessert. And she goes, honestly, like, he did everything amazing. Nothing comes to mind. He achieved greatness, but still was there for the family and led, and you carved out quality time. Like, that's crazy. That's incredible. So that's kudos to you. And with that, you know, as me and Josh and all the guys in my life, we're trying to build healthy, strong, and life, you know, rich life family units. What are the keys to that? Like, what are the keys to building a family?
I was sat in a Catholic church in Gainesville one time, and I was sitting there, and a priest gave a great sermon, and he said, how do you spell love? And it was T-I-M-E.
Hmm. Love that.
And you can't say, you know, I want to be there. No, you got to be there. And so did my job take me, there was times during the year where I would spend much more time with players than I did with my own family. But my off season, I would never do the golf trips. I got invited to do, you can imagine, everything. I wouldn't do it without the kids. And I was always trying to be, I had police escorts to their games. Even like when my kids were playing on a Friday, and we have a big game, mm-hmm. The police knew. We'd get in the cop cars and sirens going. We'd pull up just for that hour.
Wow.
To watch Nate or watch Gigi or Nikki or whatever. So they knew that that I would do everything I can to be there. There was a reason why I got up very early and went to bed late, because I wanted to make sure that when your kids are sleeping, you can work. And that's why I kind of tell people, and I've talked to you about this, I've talked mm-hmm. to Nate about this, so, you know, sleep is not a mandate. You know, you get a little bit of sleep and all that, and you got to take care of yourself. But don't let's say, well, I have to be at my son's baseball game, and so I can't be at work. That's fine. Go an hour earlier to work.
Yeah,
you still have your job to do, and mm-hmm. you're still, you know, the question of, are you the hardest working person? You can't have addendums. Well, I was until I had children. Well, then your career is going to suffer.
Hmm.
So you just have to be creative about your time.
Yeah.
Every Wednesday when my girls became of age, which was they were very, we had date night every Wednesday.
Did you? Like individually?
Yeah. And then and then they started going together. I would dress, make sure they'd get dressed up. Shelly'd meet me at the office, and I'd open the doors for the girls because I wanted them to be treated like ladies. And we'd go to some really nice restaurant, and it'd be date night with me and my daughters.
Love that.
And so I would always tell our coaches to do that. You know, don't use the excuse I work hard, because everybody works hard.
Mm.
You got to be creative on how you do it. Every Thursday at practice, we had family night.
Mm-hmm.
That means all the families came, and they watched the end of practice, and we all had dinner together Thursday night.
Yeah.
So I was trying to do the best I can to make sure that I carved out time for them.
It's good. Yeah, it's super good. I remember when I first met you, this story just popped in my head, which I love, because dating, the date nights and individual time with the girls, like, that is something I will continue to prioritize, because that is huge.
You know, what you'll be amazed at how much they look forward to that, too.
Yeah, yeah.
And get them dressed up.
Yes. I don't have a problem with
Gianna's little
mermaid dress. She wants to put a dress on after I wake her up, yeah. You know, in the morning. But yeah, that's so good, man. It's the highest honor of my life is to raise these girls, you know, to love their mother and show them that, and to raise these girls to be bigger on the inside, you know, big hearts, kind, but strong and tough. And I saw a quote, which I love. It's like, you don't raise daughters, you raise their standards. And if you can, what you did is you built into Nikki and Gigi these high standards for men. And the beauty of that is I wasn't always the guy who was going to be able to live up to Gigi's standards. You know, I had to become disciplined. I had to figure out myself. I had to work on me because she was such a high standard woman. I had to rise to that occasion, which is such a gift again. So you're out of coaching, out of stuff. You're busier now doing fun stuff and doing Fox Sports and Urban's Edge locally, which we can chat about. But in terms of purpose and success, where do you find purpose? And then, like, how has success evolved for you? Like, maybe then versus now?
Yeah, I think Shelly and I have had this discussion many, many times, and there's no desire to go back in the street fight. At times, I feel guilty because I'm still young enough. I could probably do it, but I have no desire. We've become really service-oriented. Shelly mentors two trafficked women with Sail of Freedom here in Sarasota. I'm on the Tebow Foundation for Anti-Human Trafficking. So that's one area that we're very involved in, that financially as well as time. And then also the veterans. I grew up in a military family and I'm on two military foundation boards. I help them raise money constantly. I'm at events. I just can't thank our veterans and first responders. You know, I'm so grateful, and I say this all the time. I speak all the time at these things, and I will start with this. I'm just grateful that I never walked by a police officer without saying, "Hey, thank you, man."
Yeah.
Or a firefighter, or a, you know, first responder of any kind. When you meet a veteran, what are you going to say? You better say thank you. Mm-hmm. You know, that person. And I've done USO trips. I've studied the military. I have very good friends, very close friends. I've been behind the scenes. I've been in an F-16. I've been around the fighter pilots. I know what these people, it's the ultimate form of selflessness. Mm. And so I'm just grateful. And I see things nowadays that for the people that really hate this country, I believe they hate our veterans. Mm. I believe they hate the military. And maybe it's some media painting, but I see things coming out of their mouth and it's hard for me to, I want to fight them. Mm. I'm like, you don't know what you're talking about. Go on a USO trip. Go spend time with the Navy SEALs or Army Rangers and National Guard, you know, the Ohio National Guard. Go see what they do.
Yeah.
And then let's have a conversation.
Yeah.
The majority of them will never go do it. You know, so I'm very, very pro first responder, very pro. So that's, and then I chase grandkids around and play golf and work out with you and getting cold tubs, I guess. That's what happens.
Living the dream, baby. So success, how would you define success back in the day with you're in the middle of your career? How would you define it then? And how would you define it now?
Did you win?
Yeah.
No, that's professionally. As a parent, you know, it would chew me up when I would miss something with my daughters. You know, they're all athletes. And so that would chew me up and that actually ate me alive at times when I would miss for stupid things. You know, my job's one thing, but when they had me go speaking somewhere and Gigi's pitching, that happened. Hmm. And I had to go meet with her AD and I said, I'm not doing this anymore. I just missed my daughter pitch. And you got me speaking to some group that I don't care about them and they probably don't care about me. So why am I doing this? But success now, I think, is grandfather, husband, dad, strong in your faith, but action. You know, are you doing something? You know, we're doing one of my passions is the Urban Edge, is that young kid that's from a really bad situation. Mm-hmm. And it becomes a flywheel or becomes a circle of mistrust for that person. Mm-hmm. And what happens? That person gets labeled a bad guy, a thug. Mm-hmm. When most of the time, majority of the time, that's not the truth at all. There's actually a great person in there. You got to go find it and help them. So that's one of my passions.
Hmm. Super good. And what I feel like what makes you a great coach and leader in person, it's a very godlike quality in a sense that it is seeing the best in people and seeing who they are, but who they can become. And you being a part of that process to help them there. Which kind of goes back to the beginning of this conversation. Like, I believe God wants more for us. We're made for more. God wants more for us, and God's always pushing us to step into that. And as a coach, as a father, as a friend, you're seeing the best in people. You're seeing what they can become, and you're trying to say something, do something, or help them taste that greatness and help them step into it.
That's huge. The way you go about it, you know, I look back and I would probably change some of the ways I went about it, but it was nothing more than I wanted that person to be great.
Yeah.
And I'm a psychology major. And the strongest forms of motivation are love, fear, and hate. Mm. Only one's sustainable.
Mm.
But fear and hate are powerful motivators.
Powerful.
Have I used those? Oh, hell yeah.
Sure.
I'm going to pull your scholarship. You know, you're too soft. You can't do this, because I would try to motivate that person for, you know, for some greatness. And is fear and hate a great motivator? It's about as good as it gets.
Yeah.
But it's not sustainable.
Short term.
Love is the only sustainable motivator.
Mm, I love that. Yeah, I was thinking, like, that works in the football field and the gridiron, but how's that going to show up in marriage? Like, how does that pull your scholarship, you know, threat?
No.
Yeah, but no, that's...
With your children.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to be... Why did I really only get one C. And it's not like I like school. It was the fact that I was horrified of my father.
Yeah.
So I got good grades.
Yeah.
Not because I was... That was fear. That was fear-driven. Mm. Was it helpful? Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Because if I came home that a C was okay, I probably got another C.
Yeah.
Maybe a couple of D's.
Yeah.
But that was not going to happen in our household.
Mm. Are you more motivated by love or fear these days?
Oh, it's I think fear, I hate to say that I wish I could control it, but there's still a piece of me, but that drove me in my career. Fear of failure, fear of letting people down. It's probably why I had a shelf life. You know, I knew 55 years old, I'm done.
Yeah.
You know, some of these coaches are coaching until they're 75 years old. I would have never been able to do that.
Yeah.
My body couldn't take it.
Hmm. Yeah. That's super good. The motivation to be great. Yeah. Like you said, that's your motivation, your approach made you an absolute savage. But yeah, sustaining that further.
But I think this is, and we can kind of close with this, but it's a visual. When you get in a fight with someone or you're playing against someone, a motivated person, what's motivation versus inspiration? Motivation is, and this is not, I didn't read this in a book. This is my theory. This is my experience.
Mm.
It's very short-term, extremely powerful way of getting people to do things maybe they don't want to do. Okay? I want to get these group to work hard. So I'm going to be love. I'm going to lose love, fear, and hate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to motivate these guys. You know, the big crowd that motivates you. I want to not let these people down. I'm exhilarated. You know, I'm going to change our jersey. You know, we're going to wear black jerseys today. That's all cute motivational stuff.
Sure.
Non-sustainable. And at time it runs out. The thing that never runs out is inspired people.
Mm.
And inspiration is built on two qualities, and that's love and ownership.
Mm.
And so as I grew in my career, I always wanted people to own their program. This is ours. This is my family. And obviously love. So if you ever get in a fight, which hopefully you don't, but that's more of a visual, you'd love to fight a motivated person. Just hang in there.
Yeah.
Because it's going to wear off.
Hmm.
Hang in there. Once you get to the second or third quarter of a football game, that motivation's gone. Now what's sustainable? Love and ownership.
Mm-hmm.
If you're facing a team that just owns it so much they're not going to lose, you'll probably lose.
Yeah. They'd rather die on the field. Yeah.
And what is that? That's Navy SEALs.
Yeah. Mm.
It's Army Rangers. Mm-hmm. It's Green Beret. It's the essence of special ops.
Mm.
The family unit, I own, this is mine. I'm not going to ever let go. Never let go of the rope.
Mm.
But that's an inspired team versus a motivated team.
I love that, dude. That's amazing. Love and ownership is the two ingredients to living inspired, which is live elevated. That's our brand. You know, Gigi and I came together, live elevated.
What about the best families ever been around? Well, they always talk about the family name. That's, they own it.
They own it.
And they love each other.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the fear, hate, and love, that's motivation, and it works.
Yeah.
On fourth down and one against a rival, when I yell at him, I'm going to pull your damn scholarship. We don't get this. You guys are too soft. You can't get this first down.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the psychology of it.
Sure. Yeah.
I'll prove them wrong. That's bullshit. You know, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't do that every, it's unsustainable.
Yeah, that's good. Master of the human psychology, creating winning cultures. Dude, thanks for being here. I'm honored to officially have a sit down with you, you know? So thanks for being here.
Awesome.
Appreciate you, man.
You.
Savage. Look. quick, yeah, cool.